Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert Reich, the author of Aftershock, The Next Economy in America's Future. He has served in three national administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton, and is the Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley, and the subject of the new feature documentary, Inequality for All. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Reich.
Hello, Ian. Good to talk to you.
And we now learn, of course, that in terms of inequality for all, it's a global issue. Just before the Davos, recent Davos conference in the Swiss Alps, Oxfam came out with a report that only 85 individuals on this planet have the combined wealth equal to that of half of the globe's population of 3.5 billion people. So your film is right on the money, right?
Well, sadly, it is. Inequality keeps growing. Not only in the United States, but in every advanced, rich nation. Now, global inequality has been with us for some time, obviously. But when you have every advanced nation and then some developing nations, certainly inequality is rampant in Russia and in China. The combination is, you get the combination that Oxfam showed, that you've got 85 people who have as much income, as much wealth, as half of the entire world's population.
So recently there was a front page story in the New York Times indicating that, in effect, we are in a plutonomy. Our economy has become a plutonomy. And I remember a few years ago there was a leak from a memo from a Citigroup of an analyst inside Citigroup suggesting that maybe we could get by with our consumer economy depending entirely on the rich. This recent report in the New York Times indicates that sales of luxury goods and at high-end restaurants are up, and at low-end restaurants like McDonald's they're up, but in the middle, the Sears, the JCPenney's, and the Olive Garden restaurants are really hurting. So I recall in your film, Nick Hanauer, the patriotic billionaire, basically saying, look, I'm a rich guy, but I can't go to 300 restaurants. In fact, I don't like dining out.
Ironically, Ian, that's one of the big problems from the standpoint of the economy as a whole, because when so much of our income and wealth is going to a smaller and smaller number of people at the top who can't possibly spend it. I mean, even if they tried, 24/7, they couldn't possibly spend everything that's coming into them. The vast middle class, meanwhile, doesn't have the purchasing power to keep the economy going. Since the recovery began, the recovery from the Great Recession, and I say so-called recovery, I mean, most people don't feel like they are actually in a recovery, but since it began in September of 2009, 95%, 95% of the economic gains have gone to the top 1%. Which means that, most people are not seeing any recovery, and that means they can't turn around and buy very much. And if they can't turn around and buy very much, then the economy is kind of stuck. It's a vicious cycle. It's just the reverse of the virtuous cycle we had in the 1950s, 1960s, and early 1970s, in which a growing middle class had the ability to turn around and buy things that generated more jobs and better wages.
Well, your film, Inequality for All, points out, I think, in many ways that we go through these cycles in American history. We had the original Gilded Age back at the turn of the 20th century, and that was followed by the accidental presidency of Teddy Roosevelt, a progressive era, then the Depression, and then the era that you pointed out from 1947 to 1977, we effectively had a social democracy. But then since Reagan, it's gone in the opposite direction. So what's your sense of where we are in terms of these ebbs and flows?
Well, we're coming up to what is probably a tipping point. That is, when median household incomes are dropping, adjusted for inflation, but a small group at the top is getting wealthier than they've ever been before, and they are paying a lower and lower percentage of their income in taxes, then the ranks of the poor are growing. That's a recipe for social and economic and political disaster. I mean, we can't continue to go in this direction, obviously. So the choice is either reform, which is the usual choice we've taken. As you said, in the progressive era, between 1901 and 1914, we chose reform. In the New Deal, during the Great Depression, we chose reform. In the 1960s, with regard to civil rights and voting rights, we chose reform. Now, this time, if we don't choose reform, we're going to be in a terrible, vicious cycle that gets just worse. I mean, what's the alternative to reform? The alternative to reform is revolution, and revolution is very risky. Revolutions can turn out very, very badly. The American Revolution turned out pretty well, but not all revolutions do. I would opt for reform, and I think that that's the likely U.S. response, the likely American response. But the question is, when? Is it going to happen in the next couple of years? Are Americans going to become so concerned and upset with this the huge gap, not only economically, but a gap between our ideals of equal opportunity and not having an aristocracy that passes on its wealth to a kind of a dynasty, dynasties of wealth, a country that's becoming more and more unequal? Are we going to become kind of upset to the point where people begin organizing and mobilizing and taking action, political action? Or are we going to just simply to wait until things get so out of kilter that the economy cannot function, our democracy is so overrun with big money that it cannot even begin to respond, we have no choice but sort of an uprising?
So do you sense, though, in this election year, this midterm election year, that this issue of inequality is in the zeitgeist? I know that the president has made some speeches along those lines, and my sense is that unless this year the White House pulls out all the stops and runs as though they're running in a presidential election, because it's really about turnout. If you look at 2008, 145 million voted. 2 years later, the Democrats got trounced in the midterms, where only 75 million voted. So if the Republicans have learned something from the last election, they're going to spend more money. They're probably going to have clever strategies. So unless the Democrats have turnout, I think that we're going to have a very lame duck president. And if the Republicans take the Senate, then the plutocracy has a lock, not that they don't already.
Yeah, well, that easily could be the case. Democrats need to be talking about this. If there was ever a case for a Democratic Party, it is now. If there was ever a case for a Democratic agenda in terms of a shared prosperity, it is now. Increasing the minimum wage substantially, making it a living wage. Raising taxes on the very wealthy and reducing Social Security and payroll taxes on low-wage workers, getting rid of the tipped minimum wage, which is a scandal. I mean, you know, tipped workers are only earning $2.13 an hour. Reviving the Glass-Steagall Act so that Wall Street doesn't have another bout of melting down because it's taking too many risks with your money and my money, putting a cap on the size of the big banks. I mean, we could go on and on. Real investments in education and job training, not the kind of around the investments we're making are paltry compared to what we need. And the same thing goes for infrastructure. We've got so many long-term unemployed. We ought to be putting people to work, rebuilding the country, teachers' aides, and working on roads and bridges and parks. You know, a new WPA, a Civilian Conservation Corps, like we had in the 1930s. This country has shown itself in the past to have the resilience to do what is necessary. And the question now for Democrats and for the rest of us, even if you are not political, is to become politically engaged and push the politicians in this direction.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert Reich, the author of Aftershock, The Next Economy in America's Future. He has served in three national administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton, and is the Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley, and the subject of the new feature documentary, Inequality for All. So as long as, of course, as we export our jobs and import cheap labor, structurally it seems that we're doomed. And talking again about the 85 individuals that have wealth equivalent to half of the world's population. It does seem that Adam Smith's idea of capital transcending sovereignty is happening, that we have a kind of global group of plutocrats who really don't have any adherence to national policy. Could we have a movement towards a patriotic economy? I mean, in other words, can we...
Ian, we've got to be very careful. You know, if we go back into isolationism and chauvinism and jingoism, the kinds of things that have caused huge problems in the past, then we're not really improving standard of living for anybody, and we're condemning many people in developing nations to lives of deep hardship and poverty. One of the worst things we do, for example, is to give our wealthy agribusinesses gigantic subsidies, and we have tariffs on agricultural imports, which hurt developing nations desperately because they are dependent on their agricultural exports, don't help average workers in this country who have to pay more for the food that they buy, but end up really just enriching a handful of not really farmers. They're called farmers, but they're really giant agribusinesses. Well, that's the kind of thing that we've got to crack down on. Get rid of all of the corporate welfare. You know, we are subsidizing not only agribusiness, but the oil companies, major national gas companies. We're subsidizing military contractors. We've been doing this for years. It's getting worse. We're subsidizing the drug companies, pharmaceutical manufacturers. We are doing all of their basic research and yet giving them extraordinary patent protections. If you talk about our government, I mean, the issue is not the size of the government. The issue is who government is for. And right now, too often, the government is for the very, very wealthy individuals who are making the big campaign contributions and also the big corporations that are also making big campaign contributions. We need stronger unions in this country. Now, only fewer than 7% of private sector workers are unionized. There's no bargaining power in the private sector on behalf of working people.
Well, it would seem that since the wealthy control our government, they're getting the kind of government that they want, and it's working well for them, and that they're also at the same time telling us that government doesn't work, and that's been going on since Ronald Reagan. Where do you think the narrative, apart from your film, Inequality for All, is coming from or can come from to make people recognize that they can take back their government and they can have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people?
Well, that's why we did the film, really, Ian, basically to connect the dots, to show people what's going on, not to create or demonize anybody, not to create villains, but to make sure people understand how the system is now working and failing to work and why it's failing to work. Getting big money out of government and out of politics is probably more important than almost anything else, because we can't do anything else until we get big money out of our politics. In the other hat I wear when I'm not teaching here at UCal Berkeley is I'm chair of a citizens group called Common Cause, which has been fighting for years, and it keeps on growing, and the fight keeps on growing as well, against big money in politics. We must do that. The Supreme Court's really insane decision in Citizens United against the Federal Election Commission, that 2010 decision, has got to be reversed. We've got to demand that it be reversed. We've got to have a constitutional amendment to reverse it, if nothing else will reverse it. And we've got to have campaign, public financing of all general election campaigns.
Well, in terms of, just to clarify, I wasn't suggesting earlier, Robert Reich, about bringing back any kind of Smoot-Hawley protectionism, but rather sort of engendering some kind of sense of patriotism in terms of our economy for people, for example. A lot of people find Apple products incredibly good, and they are, and they deserve to be successful. On the other hand, we learn that they're parking an awful lot of their profits abroad. So isn't there a question there that could be addressed?
Oh, yes, there's a huge question. I mean, big corporations, have trillions of dollars outside the United States. They're not bringing back to create jobs here. They're just parking it abroad to save money. And they're, some big companies are setting up a kind of hedge funds with all the money that they have abroad. They're not even investing it. They're not They're doing nothing with it. This isn't building a competitive economy. This is just adding to the casino. So we do need to create both tax penalties for companies that that hide their money abroad and also tax incentives to bring the money back.
But also on a domestic front, aren't these big corporations also buying back stock and not investing in R&D and driving up the price of stock?
Exactly. I mean, Apple is a good, a sad example. I mean, you'd think of all companies that should be investing in technology and has in the past invested substantially in new technology. I mean, Apple is using a big portion of its savings to buy back its shares of stock. It's also borrowing in global lending arenas to buy back its shares of stock. Now, this when companies buy back their stock, which is what companies are doing like mad now, all they're doing is they're artificially raising the price of their stock because when they buy it back, there's less stock remaining, and that creates higher demand. But that's not doing anything for the long term. That's the most unimaginative and silly way of spending your shareholders' money that anybody can imagine. Any company that is buying back its own stock, you know, its current shareholders and institutional investors and pension funds ought to be asking, why are you doing that? Don't you have any ideas for the long term at all?
And I thank you so much for joining us, Robert Reich.
Well, thank you, Ian. I should also add that it is already on DVD and iTunes and on demand, and in a couple of weeks it will be on Netflix.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Reich, who's the author of Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. He has served in three national administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton, and is a Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley, and the subject of the new feature documentary, Inequality for All. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.
Time was